Rama Rama Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Thank you for attending this class. I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 18, Conclusion, The Perfection of Renunciation, text number 65. Manmanabha madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mame vaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. So this is Srila Prabhupada's purport. This, the most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one should always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will engage in this association with Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form the two hands carrying a flute, a bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hand. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind upon this original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayan, Rama, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. This is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. Manmana, so the text again. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mamai vaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you'll come to me without fail. I promise you this, because you are my very dear friend. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamite Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Siddharna. Krishna consciousness philosophy is quite simple. It only has two aspects to it. One is the truth about the self, the spiritual soul, and two, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has many names such as Krishna or Jehovah, Yahweh, etc. In the Vedic literature, he's called Krishna because his most important qualities are that he's all attractive, and he has six major opulences, namely Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashashastriha, Jnana Vairagyaschaiva, Shana Bhaga, Hitinganaha. That is, Krishna or God is not just some ordinary person who got elected as God, or happened to be God, who knows why. But he's a person who has opulences that attract everyone. Namely, he has beauty, but he has beauty to an unlimited degree. Now, we can't imagine what beauty to an unlimited degree is, so it doesn't mean that just by stating that, then we'd recognize Krishna when he walked in. But he also has unlimited fame, he has unlimited wealth, he has unlimited strength, he has unlimited renunciation, and he has unlimited knowledge. Now, we can't really test Krishna's renunciation or his strength or his fame or his other opulences, but we can test whether or not God or Krishna, he has perfect knowledge. For that reason, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and anyone who reads the Bhagavad Gita, they're able to judge for themselves whether or not what Krishna says is true or not. So the first thing in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says concerning ourselves is that we're not who we think we are. That actually we're not this body, nor are we the mind, but we're the unknown soul within the body. Not only no one else knows us, but we don't even know who we are. All we know is we exist, and we know certain things about ourselves, like we can know that we're eternal. And how do we know that? Because all the other identifications that we have with this gross body, with our subtle body, with our conception of life, even with our personality, those things are always changing. They're never the same. But we ourselves, who are identifying ourselves with all these different temporary manifestations of this body and mind and intelligence and ego, we ourselves were always the same. Therefore, we may go through so many different experiences in this material world, but we're always the person who's going through experiences, although the experiences are always different. Now, one experience that everyone is looking for is that we want shelter. Now, why do we want shelter? Because we're in a place which is Dharashaya. Dharashaya means it's a very bad shelter. For instance, we love our body. As I said before, which I'll repeat again, because maybe you haven't heard it. We get up in the morning and we look in the mirror and we ask the mirror. What do we ask the mirror? Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And of course, the mirror answers us immediately, telling us, declaring that, my dear soul, that by some good fortune, you have an opportunity to see the Supreme within the mirror. So now, you have to become sincere and render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to the deity in the mirror. And inspired by such enlightenment, we begin to render service by performing abhishek to the deity. That is, we take a shower in the morning if we're a little pious. Then we dress the deity. We decorate the deity. We put perfume on the deity. We feed the deity all kinds of offerings. And then we go out to spread the glories of the deity all over the world. So actually everyone is worshiping a deity, but for the materialist who doesn't know the fact that they're actually a spiritual being, they're engaged in worshiping a dead body, idol worship. But for those who are actually enlightened, they understand that this eternal soul, myself, ourselves, actually what we want is some eternal shelter. Because obviously it would be rather boring to just exist by ourselves, to just exist there loving ourselves. It wouldn't be very much to love because we're very tiny, although we could do it for some time. As a matter of fact, we've been doing it eternally, loving ourselves. But the next thing, and we project the love for ourselves onto all those things which give us shelter, our body, our family, our community, our society, our country, all these things that give shelter to ourselves, we say we love them. Even we say we love our car. And we even project ourselves onto our baseball or a football team, whatever. Because they give comfort to the self. But all these different things, whether it's my body, which is so dear and near to me, or my mind, or whatever else I claim to be part of me, or even the things that surround me and give comfort to my body, and therefore indirectly to myself, such as my family, my friends, my community, Los Angeles, America, the world, they're all temporary. Therefore, they're called Dharasha, because ultimately, they themselves, not only they can't give me shelter, but they themselves have no shelter. I may think that my wife and children, they may give me shelter. They may protect me. My husband will protect me. He'll pay the bills. My dog will keep out any intruders. My bank balance will pay the bills. We may think that these things will protect me, but they themselves are just temporary. They can't protect themselves. Prahlad Maharaj said, Valasya Neha Sharanam Pitaro Nishinga. In this world, everyone is looking for shelter. The child is looking for shelter from his parents. The patient is looking for shelter from the doctor and from the medicine. The people on the boat, they're looking for shelter, that the boat will take them across the river or the ocean. But the boat may sink. The patient may die. The child may succumb to death or disease. Or they may live. They may cross the ocean. The medicine may work. The child may grow up. But everyone dies anyhow. That famous story, that person who crossed by, he was working in the boiler room of the Titanic. You all know the Titanic was rather an unfortunate boat. Supposedly it could not sink, and on its first voyage it hit an iceberg and sank within a couple of hours into the icy cold water. Now practically everyone died. Not so much from the boat sinking, but from the icy cold water. So this man was working in the boiler room, very unfortunate. But he was fortunate because when the boat hit the iceberg, the boiler, that which heats the ship, exploded. And all the oil from the boiler covered his body. So when he was thrown into the ocean, he was protected from the icy cold water because his body was covered with oil. So he survived. 1 month later, he was celebrating. I'm still alive. I was saved. So he got drunk. He was in New York City. And there was a little rain. And there was 1/4 inch of water between the sidewalk and the street. And he fell and tripped into that 1/4 inch of water and drowned. His nose was in that water. And because he was drunk, he drowned. So he made it across the ocean. He survived the sinking of the Titanic. But ultimately, there was no shelter. Even one lady, she was in the news some years ago, and she was in Indonesia, what is that place called? Bali, yeah. So she was in a nightclub and she walked out 5 minutes before some bombs were planted and killed hundreds of people there. So she was quite happy that somehow or another she survived. So she went to Australia and celebrated with her friends the fact that they survived, took a vacation, and she was up in northern part of Australia, and she was going swimming in the middle of the night, and she was eaten by a crocodile right before the sign which said, "Beware of crocodiles." So everyone is looking for shelter in this material world, but it's Dharasha. There is no shelter. Now, as spiritual beings, we have to find an eternal shelter, someone or something that's also eternal. So Krishna is recommending that we think about him. Now, why think about Krishna? How will that give us shelter? Because actually the only problem we have is that we identify ourselves with this body, which has so many problems. But we ourselves really have no problem because we're eternal. How can an eternal person have any problems? So our only problem is that we think we have problems. And once we realize who we are, then we'll find out we have no problems. So the only thing we have to do is find out who we actually are. We don't have to become rich. We don't have to take vitamins every day. We don't have to do our push-ups. We don't have to pass our tests. Even if we fail our test, even if we don't get 100 on our spelling test, even if the bank takes away our house, there's no problem for us, the soul, because we have no problems. We can't have problems because we're eternal. But because our eternal knowledge is covered, therefore we think we have problems, so what we have to do is recover our eternal consciousness again. So Krishna says, manmana, because if we simply become conscious of our actual self by becoming conscious of the Supreme Self, then there's no more problems. We will realize that actually we have no problems. Just like Krishna says, Gyanena tutara gyanam, yesham nashitam atmanaha, tesham adityavaj gyanam, prakashiti tatparam. One is enlightened with the knowledge by which nations is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, just like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So, if we become aware of Krishna, then automatically we become aware of ourselves also. The only reason why we're not, and Krishna, he's absolute. Therefore, there's no difference between thinking about Krishna and actually associating with Krishna. So our only problem is that we don't want to associate with Krishna. And how do we know we don't want to associate with Krishna? Because we don't even know who Krishna is, most of us. And even if we heard about him, we have no real desire to associate with him. We're not dying, rolling over and crying because we're not with Krishna right now. Therefore, because we're not aware of Krishna, just like, how is it possible to become aware of everything if there's no light? If there's no sun in the sky, how do we understand what's going on in this world if there's no light? If there's no Krishna, there's no spiritual light, and therefore we can't see things properly. Now our problem is we don't really care what we see Krishna or not, because we like the illusion that we're under. We think it's pretty good. It may be an illusion, but it's a nice illusion. Illusion in the sense, it's only temporary. Not that it doesn't exist, but we don't mind because I'm not in Syria right now. I'm in America. I'm in the land of the free and the brave. We got money in the bank. We got friends. Let's party. And when things get tough, we'll chant Hare Krishna. So that God, he can help us out and let the party go on. In God we trust. It used to say that in the dollar bill. Until people started to trust more in the Federal Reserve than in God. In any case, we'll trust in God as long as he keeps the money coming. That's what they mean. We trust in God, they'll keep on printing up these bills so we can pay our bills. So without actually developing some desire to become Krishna conscious, to become conscious of Krishna, why will Krishna reveal himself? He'd spoil our party. If we realize we were souls, 1/10,000th of tip of hair in size, our big, big false ego would go away and our whole party would be spoiled. All our desires, endeavors, everything would all be in vain. Therefore, we'd rather not become Krishna conscious. Or as one priest said, my dear Lord, please make me celibate. But not quite yet. So our whole Krishna conscious movement is offering an opportunity to directly meet Krishna or God. But there's a process to help us develop a desire to do that. First of all, part of the process is give us the information, the fact that we're in a difficult situation. If we think we're in a wonderful situation, my God, who could want such a wonderful place we're in? The weather is great. The food's fantastic. My friends are all, you know, the best. Everything's wonderful. I don't want anything else. Then we're not very good candidates to becoming God conscious. On the other hand, we think, we realize that we're in a very difficult situation. We're only here for a very short period of time. And who knows where we're going next? According to Bhagavad Gita, according to what we do in this lifetime, then we get our next lifetime. And not every next lifetime is necessary human form of life. There are many birds and grasshoppers and trees, and they all thought they were going to heaven. Their souls and their bodies too, and they all thought they were going to heaven, and when they woke up, they were surprised. How did I get here? So we don't know where we're going next, and going next may not be as pleasant as being. We may become an American again, but if you become an American tree, or an American cockroach, you might get sprayed. Therefore, it is not a very safe place to live. Even if we're in Brahma Loka, the topmost planet in this universe, Brahma was sitting there and a wind came, a hurricane came, and practically knocked him off the lotus flower. And he produced children, and they try to molest him. Juvenile delinquents. Therefore, even Brahma, the most pious person in this world, in this universe, he himself is having difficulty. And what to speak of ourselves? Therefore, we have to become convinced that if I take shelter of Krishna, especially by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by hearing the philosophy, become convinced to actually ask Srimati Radharani and Krishna to engage me in their loving service. Not that it's a nice song and we sing it all the time. Number one hit in Goloka Vrindavan, and probably going to get a gold record here too. No, we're not just singing it because it's nice music. It's actually a prayer to Srimati Radharani and Krishna to engage us in their loving service so we can transcend the material conception of life, come to the spiritual existence where we can experience real happiness and love and pleasure and awareness, awakening of our true sense of identity and awareness of everyone else and everything else as it actually is eternally. So it's a prayer, and part of the prayer is we have to realize we can't force Krishna to reveal himself. We have no real qualification. Just like a prisoner can't tell the governor, you know, get me out of here, you rascal. He has to become a little prayerful, pleading, begging. So similarly, if we realize we have no qualification, how much qualification will a very tiny soul have what does a soul have to give to Krishna, who has everything, who's unlimited? So what do we have to offer to Krishna? We can't threaten him. You get me out of here, or else I'm gonna go and, you know, call the police. I never was supposed to be here. There's some mistake. No, we have to prayerfully, lovingly call out to Srimati Radharani Krishna. Prabhupada said, just like a child calling out for their mother. So in that mood, if we chant Hare Krishna, then when Krishna sees our sincerity, then he'll reciprocate. When we actually want to become conscious of Krishna, well, as much as we develop the desire to become conscious of Krishna, to that extent Krishna will actually reveal himself. But then we have to expect that some of my conceptions may go, material conceptions may go away. We have to be prepared for that. A little detachment from this whole endeavor to find protection here. So those things will go away. But it's not that we have a family, we're going to become indifferent from them. You know, we're going to go home, our mother's going to come to greet us, to hug us. We'll go, wait a second, I'm a brahmachari, I don't touch women. No, it's not that we're going to become detached from our family, but we'll be able to see our family, our wife, our husband, our children, our friends, our relatives, the people in general. We'll be able to see them in relationship to their eternal identity, in relationship to the eternal Supreme Lord. And our actual, as we love Krishna, our love for every other living entity will also expand. It's not going to decrease. It's actually going to increase our affection for others. Real love will awaken within us, and therefore everything will improve, even our so-called family life. And if we don't love Krishna, we won't be able to love our real selves, nor will we love anyone else. It'll all be a pretense, to simply try to get some happiness and shelter from others, not necessarily in reciprocation, but usually at their expense. But there is no shelter. No one can actually love us if they don't know who we are. We don't even know who we are. So how can anyone love us if we don't even know who we are? They don't know who they are. They don't know who we are. We don't know who they are. It is all just a pretense. I'll love you if you love me, and we'll take shelter together. It's like grabbing the tail of your favorite dog and telling him to cross the ocean with you. How can a dog cross the ocean? You may grab hold of the tail of a dog. He may be your favorite dog, but neither he's going to cross the ocean, nor you can. You'll both drown in a loving embrace. So our idea is find out about Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita, the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to give us a real awareness that there is a person controlling this universe. That's why the sun rises at a certain time. That's why the sun sets at a certain time. That's why we eat food, is digested, assimilated, the unnecessary parts are eliminated. That's why there are so many perfect arrangements in this material world for our at least temporary maintenance, temporary survival. It's all meant to help us make progress in discovering our real selves and the existence of the person who's made all these arrangements for us. So if we take the trouble to do that, then we'll find out where our real source of love and shelter is. And if we take shelter of that real source of love and shelter, then we'll actually find shelter, and our lives will actually become meaningful and and fulfilling. So, thank you very much. What time are we supposed to go? What's that? Questions. Anyone have a question? In relationship to what we said. Yes, so we have a microphone. Just now coming.
Question?
Yes.
You can repeat it.
What book is that from where Brahma, he got molested by his kids?
That's called Srimad Bhagavatam.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Third canto. We can. There's some copies outside, I'm sure.
Thank you for the wonderful lecture. You were speaking about the Srimad Bhagavatam, and something that kind of triggered me was the Sukadeva Goswami. He was able to. How did we find out that he was this parrot, and able to speak from making a bridge from this parrot to this human being body and being able to speak? Can you please tell me more about Sukadeva Goswami?
You mean that he was one of the parrots? I'm not really so sure where that comes from, but I heard it myself. That he's. I don't. Which does anyone know? Yeah. But Shuka means parrot. But where that comes from, I don't know.
Question?
Anything else? Yes. But here's another.
Krishna Maharaj, can you tell please more about how we can came to the stage when we can constantly remember Krishna?
We can what to Krishna?
How we can come to the stage when we constantly remember Krishna?
Well, when we constantly, the general principle is that as we get a higher taste, as we get an actual taste for Krishna consciousness, then generally we want to get more and more experience. So it's a question of following the process from the very beginning, chanting a certain number of rounds every day, try to read the philosophy so we can learn how to chant without offense, rendering service to the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by telling others about Krishna, just following the process given to us. And as we make progress a little bit at a time, then generally we'll gradually become free from our material conception of life. And then the time will come when we're free from our material conception of life, and then we'll actually develop a taste for hearing about Krishna and chanting about Krishna. And then we don't want to stop because it gets nicer and nicer all the time. It's like eating an ice cream cone with your favorite flavor, and every time you take a lick, it actually gets nicer and it lasts forever. So imagine, and you never get full. You get more and more hungry. So that's what the Hare Krishna mantra is like when we become liberated.
Maharaj, you mentioned there are two things to know. One is about self and another about Krishna.
Yes.
So which one is easier to start? Which one is easier to understand? Like first you should start.
Well, generally speaking, people understand the difference between their body and their self, at least theoretically. I remember one time I was distributing a book to someone in Austin, Texas, and I was showing him the picture of the changing body, how the body keeps on changing from boyhood to youth to old age, then it passes onto another body. So I said, which body are you? And he pointed to this body. So he said, and then he looked at me and he said, yeah, that's right, I'm not this body. Wow, that's fantastic. I said, well, why don't you take the book and you can read it and find out more. And he shook my hand and said, no, thanks a lot. You know, that's wonderful, I'm not the body, but I'm not interested in your book. And then he just walked away. So generally speaking, it's not that difficult to understand that the body's changing, but we're not changing. But to go deeper than that is usually a little bit more difficult. Do you have a question? Yeah.
Maharaj, it's a comment and a question. When I was a child, I used to see my grandmother and many of those generation going to church. And my understanding was that religion is just for older people. When I was in college, I mean in high school also, none of my friends were interested. And so on and on. So it appears that 90% of the youth, children and youth, they're not really interested. Sense gratification is so strong. So would you like to make a comment in that?
Well, we have to serve something. Either we serve our senses or we serve something superior. But if we have no information about anything superior, then the only thing we're left with is serving our senses. So it's one thing to say we go to church, but then what do we do in church? If we go to church and pray for God, to God for bread, as if God has a bakery in the sky, and that his business is, you know, we go to church to make an order, and then he has the delivery truck, you know, waiting. Well, we could probably walk to the store and buy the bread. Why do we have to go to church? Yeah, I mean, just in general, because just like I saw one movie, it was a documentary about who is God. So they're going around asking all the prominent religious people in the world who God was. And all they could say, well, God is love, or God is peace, or God is, you know, the infinite. No one knew anything about God. They even went to Hugh Hefner, the head of Playboy, who was surrounded by his bunnies. They said, who is God? And he said, God is jazz. So if people have no idea who God is, how are they going to worship and love him? What is the use of going to church if you don't find out anything? Or synagogue or the mosque? What is the use? You can stay home, watch television. You get more information, what's going on. Therefore, we have real religions tell people knowledge about who they actually are. For the fact that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the body is changing, but the self, the soul within the body, is not changing. So that's information, that's knowledge, that applies to everyone. That can start us on a spiritual journey. The fact that God is the controller of everything, for that reason the sun rises at a certain time and sets at a certain time.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for a wonderful class. And the purport, Prabhupada explains that we should focus our attention on Krishna, so we should not divert our attention on another forms of God. So, for going back to Krishna, we need to be 100% pure. So what happens if my qualification is not 100%, it's just less than that, and I qualify for going to Vaikuntha? So can I go from Vaikuntha to Goloka Vrindavan?
Yes.
Or how is that?
If you're fortunate enough, you can go there if there's a... But that means somehow or another... Well, as it says in the Nectar of Devotion, sometimes people go to Vaikuntha, which is quite a good qualification itself. Just like Gop Kumar in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he first went to Vaikuntha. But because his actual relationship was with Krishna as a Gopal in Goloka Vrindavan, therefore he was never satisfied. And he received information from Narada Muni in Vaikuntha, and he was able to make further progress. And eventually, actually was in Goloka Vrindavan with Gopal, his worshipful deity. So that's possible, to go from Vaikuntha. He went from Vaikuntha to Ayodhya in the spiritual world, to Dwarka in the spiritual world, and finally he went to Goloka Vrindavan. So I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.